I think we're just rolling.
Are we gonna do the slow intro again? I didn't realize we were recording, Donovan. Hey, welcome to the Reflex Blue Show. My name's Nate Voss.
I'm Donovan Beery, and we got with us Justin Ahrens from Rural 29 in Geneva, Illinois.
What's up, guys? We like to call it Chicago, but it's Geneva, really. It's a wonderful, quaint town.
By the way, are we going to talk at all about your Cornhuskers coming to the Big Ten?
I think that is a Justin/Donovan topic I'm willing to sit out on. I don't follow
a lot of college ball.
Okay.
Donovan does follow a lot of balls.
Do you guys have a Big Ten team there in Geneva or something?
No, we're in the heart of Big Ten country. I mean, we have Northwestern and we have U of I. I'm an Ohio State fan, you know, because that's the way I roll. But
right. Yeah, you know what?
I thought it was just Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, and that was the whole conference. I'm wrong.
Are those teams in that conference? Seriously, you could be speaking Latin to me right now, Justin. Yes, I'm not going to know.
Well, I'm glad I brought that up during the show because this is pretty interesting, Nate. You have no knowledge about this whatsoever.
I know, go Huskers.
Nate even illustrated a book, a children's book about the Huskers.
Yes, and ask me how much I know about how well they're doing this season. I couldn't tell you.
What's their record right now?
They've only lost one.
Yeah, I was going to say, they lost one. I know that.
However many they've played, minus one.
Yes. So 16-1 is my current. I think the Huskers, go Skurs, 16-1.
They are top 10 rated right now.
Yep. I did see that also because I saw we had dudes come over to play Rock Band last weekend, but we couldn't play Rock Band because the husband had to finish watching the Husker game before we could plug it in. That's the only reason I saw any of it.
I did catch the last part of it on radio on the way home because I was actually working at it.
Nice. Go Skurs. Okay, so welcome back to the Reflex Blue Show. We've got Justin live via the iChats coming in. So if the audio sounds weird, that's I'm going to say
Vaughn's fault.
Vaughn's fault or El Nino, I was going to call out, but it took me a second. El Nino, as you, of course, know, stands for the Nino.
Is it back this summer?
Donovan, come on. I know as much about El Nino as I know about football. This is, by the way, probably my favorite show intro we've done this far. So, we've been talking the last couple weeks about working with clients. Something as designers, most of us wind up doing. Though, I guess, you know, if I think back to my earlier career in design as I was, you know, going from a lowly gopher to a mid-level gopher, I didn't have much client interaction. So I didn't have, you know, I had to pick up all this stuff after I went out on my own. But we've been talking about how to talk with clients. We talked about getting paid last time. If you guys haven't listened to that show yet, go back, listen to our last episode of the Reflex Blue Show, billing and collecting from design clients with the awesome Boba Fett artwork on it, which just, Donovan, can I tell you, the Boba Fett artwork for that, just spot on, conceptually. Very happy with that.
It was mentioned in the show. Actually, it was during the process of the last show that we realized that in order to bill, you need to get a job. And to get a job, you need to tell a client how much money it costs.
I want to say get a gig. I think you say get a job, and you're like, and you can get a job at Starbucks.
So today we want to focus on pricing.
Yes.
And in particular, not necessarily pricing for big agencies, more freelance, small firms.
Let's talk about pricing.
No, but I mean, a lot of the things that when I go to a conference and I hear people talk about pricing, they say things that you're like, that doesn't relate to me because I don't have jobs that have.
All right, here we go. And Justin, topic one.
Yes, sir. The
batshit insane things you hear at design conferences about how to price yourself. What is the most batshit insane thing you've ever heard someone tell you about how to price or how to send out estimates? Take your time.
Wow, it's on the spot. I like that. Well, I think one of the first conferences I went to, I don't even remember the speaker, but they put up these terms and conditions.
Yes.
They were like 8 pages long.
Mm.
And I'm just like, I'm not sure any client is going to sign off on that because it looks like, you know, we're getting into some sort of, you know, mortgage contract or contract or something.
Very mortgage-like, yes.
It was very intimidating. And so I've never had something like that. And it hasn't been since the last couple of years where I've had a lot of problems collecting, but the last 2 years has been the hardest for us to get people to consistently pay, which has made me want to have that, you know, contract in blood.
I want to say that you should go back and listen to our last show. We talked about that the whole time. It's
but we didn't
great.
Talk about 8-page letters.
Well, yeah. Oh, no. Okay. Because that is – I think everyone who's been to any design conference has encountered the speaker that says, here is 8 pages of legal nonsense
but it does,
to put in your
but
contract.
But what Justin's saying is that does help when it comes to actually collecting. But it doesn't help in getting the job, and that's all we're talking about.
I've certainly had it happen. I had this earlier on, which is why I don't send out much. Like, I don't send out very thick contracts. I put in the very specific things that need to be in there to protect the client, to protect me. But one time, I had a client super excited to work with me. I was super excited to work with them. I sent them the contract. I did the thing with the AIGA standard agreement for design, which by itself I want to say is 165 pages long. And I just pulled out the bits that I needed, and I put those in. And it was like it might have been like a 10-page thing, man. And I put all that in there. And nope, scared him straight off. Never heard from him again. But so it's like this double-edged sword, isn't it? Where it's like, sure, it would be great to have all that stuff in there, but how many of us are really doing those mega deals that require all that? I mean, how many of us are doing the next AT&T logo?
Yeah, I mean, you have to protect yourself, that's for sure. I mean, you have to do, you know, your due diligence on, you know, making sure that your client takes what you're doing seriously. And so you definitely have to have some sort of, and I'm sure you guys talked about this in your last show, but I know that it all starts with the relationship. And if you feel like you have to give the people you work with, you know, a 289-page contract on how not to screw you, then it's probably not the right client for you.
Yeah, dude. Yes, that is wisdom right there. I absolutely agree. But so that's one bit, is that contract that goes along with it. And my advice to the world is, well, just kind of follow up on what Justin just said.
Right.
It's like you'll know how much you should send and how much you don't need.
But what I wanted to focus on was when they say, how much is this going to cost me, what you say? Because the thing I like to say, which never works out, which mm-hmm. I really don't say, is the old the National Lampoon's Vacation line that, well, how much you got?
How much you got?
I say something very similar to that. And really, I just turn the question back onto them and I ask them, you know, what is the value of this project to you? You know, so for example, you know, we'll have companies say, well, you know, my website, this is exactly what they'll say to me. The website is our number one marketing tool. You know, we get X amount of 1,000 hits a month on our sites. It's really important, but I only have blank for a budget.
Yeah, I've got $500.
And blank is not enough. Or they don't tell you the budget, right?
So, oh, yeah. I mean, I think that should be our starting point there.
Yeah. So I sit down with them and I say, hey, listen, let's just talk about what you just said. You know, if this is, you know, one of your key marketing tools, then we need to invest into it. We need to make sure that, you know, it does all the things that you want it to do, that it's, you know, collects data or is you know, easy to update or integrate social media or whatever the, you know, things are that they need.
Yeah, whatever the parameter.
Yeah.
Of success.
You know, you can't say it's one of your most valuable marketing tools and then give me, you know, a budget for, you know, Facebook page or whatever.
Right, right.
It's not going to work.
But
I start over there. No, I'll say that's how we started the conversation.
Yeah, well, and one of the things like, you know, to what Donovan said, just setting that up, is when a client says, how much will this cost? I think it's even worth a point of discussion about how much I enjoy when a client actually comes out and asks me that question. Because sometimes even just getting to that point can be a little hairy. Getting to the point in the conversation where it's, okay, it's time to talk about money. So let me ask you two gentlemen this. Put you in a situation, hypothetical here. You've been chatting with this client out. You're running out of things to talk about. How do you make sure the topic of compensation becomes a part of that conversation? And when do you do that?
Who's going first, me or you, Don?
I'll go. I think, I mean, this is one of those things where most of the time, most of the clients want to know that right up front. And so, I mean, a lot of times I have them ask a little.
It's okay, Justin, you can take that call.
Sorry, boys.
That's all right. Don't say anything you don't want on the air. No, go ahead, man.
I have clients ask a little too early. And so it's always like, well, what is it before? It's like, I don't even know exactly what you want. So you have to actually get down to the parameters of what you want. And then we have our sponsor, the Freelance Formula, that's on our site. And I watched one of his videos, and he made a very good point in there that said, you need to tell them before you leave that first meeting, a ballpark number, if at all possible, because you'll get a much better success rate of selling something if people leave that meeting. And when the estimate comes to them a few days later, they have an idea of what they're going to get.
Yeah, so that can eliminate some of that sticker shock that can definitely creep in.
So if it doesn't come up, once you have it, I always like to, you know, when the meeting's wrapping up, you say, okay, and give a recap and say, if I am understanding correctly, these are the items you are looking for. This is what you are trying to achieve with them. You know, we've done something similar for X dollars.
Right. I will
write this up and get you an estimate within X days.
Right. Quick pro tip about ballparks. If you, and I think Donovan, you're the one that originally told me this, is if you give them a range, if you say, I'm spitballing anything here, if you say, oh, that'll be between $500 and $1,000, the only number they will hear is, that will be $1,000.
Yeah, that is correct.
Right. So just know that,
so
listeners,
just say
going into your ballparks.
Around $1,000. Rather than $500 to $1,000.
Right, and that also lets you charge them $1,000 instead of $500. But Justin, same question. How do you bring up the topic of conversation if it hasn't yet come up?
Yeah, and I was interested in what you said, Donovan, because some of that I wouldn't do. But and what I mean by that is I really spend as much time as I can getting to know the client. Theoretically, we've done some research, right? We're talking about stuff. If we're actually having a face-to-face meeting, you know, there's been some, you know, initial, you know, talking and presenting already happened. At least that's how it typically works for us. But I never, ever, ever quote a price while I'm there for a couple reasons. One, I feel like if I can just flip a price out on the top of my head, that what I'm doing for them is not unique and it's not special.
Well, this is where we only do it if it's something where, you know, if somebody comes to you and said, hey, we need a stationary set, how many of those have you done?
If Donovan's
you know about
super hard up,
you know
if
about
you can't
what
make
that's
that
gonna
rent
cost,
payment.
If they say, and there's a bunch of custom items, that's where, yeah, you may have to go back and figure it out.
And don't get me wrong, Donovan, I've done it. I'm not saying I haven't done it. I'm saying I hate when I have to do it. And I really base it on the situation, you know, meaning if I don't tell this person, I don't think I'm going to get a call back. But I do agree that what I try to do in the presentation in the end is I'll say, okay, let's talk about your budget. So is there a budget that you want us to work within to be able to accomplish X, Y, and Z? And, you know, very seldom where you get that number.
Right.
And so the only thing I do then is I usually will talk about some of the stuff and I may give them numbers that are extremely high and say, you know, we could, you know, depending on the details of your project and what your budget is, you know, we could be lower than that. I mean, it really depends on the situation.
But right,
really
but that I like how that sets up, well, your point of view in that situation by starting out high. It allows you to go lower if necessary. But if, you know, if they don't blink at that, then good for you to get paid for what you're worth.
Well, I mean, part of it is I hear this a lot, which kind of ticks me off, but there's a lot of times where I'll walk in and someone will say, wow, we're so glad to work with you, you know, and it might be one of the biggest bids we've had in a while. Like, man, you are just so, so cost effective. And I'm just like, when they turn their back, I'm punching myself in the face. Cause I'm like, really? I thought we were super high. And so,
nice.
You know,
Can you send me their names, please?
we track those things to try to figure out what it is that, you know, maybe we underbid or whatever else. And so next time we have that scenario, we try to, you know, not be in that situation.
Right.
But,
but hopefully in those situations, you're, cause you've got a whole team of people. Now, Donovan and I kind of operate independently. Donovan will occasionally have, some helpers, let me say, but I mean, hopefully Justin, in that situation, I mean, you guys are still getting paid, you know, what you're worth for your time, right?
Most of the time.
Sure.
Yeah. No,
or maybe you can make up for it on those little ones. Like, yeah, that threefold brochure, that's going to be about $35,000, give or take. He wants to do that flyer for your promo, for your concert. We'll put flyers on people's cars. $65,000. Yeah, I'm not sure why I roll into that like accent from Vacation from St. Louis. I'm not sure why rolling into that accent for that.
But. So when you're in St. Louis, you're in the hood.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I just got to get across the river.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take roll a break. When we come back, we're going to talk pricing by hour or by flatbed. So one of the things that people always ask is, how much do you charge per hour? What is the proper answer to that?
Can I say that, and I definitely want to hear from Justin on this because I remember, one of the reasons that I wanted you to be on the show today is that we both sat in on a really great session at the last AIJ conference, kind of about this specific topic. But there's a part of me, Donovan, that feels like I get that question more from other designers than I do from clients. Do you guys ever experience that? Do you get a lot of clients that come out to you with the "what's your hourly rate" question?
It happens.
Yeah, Justin, what about you?
Not too much. And I think that I don't know if it's the type of clients that we're getting, or you know, it's just you know, I kind of it's part of my pitch when I tell them. I said, you know, we repricing is based on you know the value that we see them being for you in the marketplace, and you know, 10 years of experience of tracking these kind of things, blah blah blah. And they will come. Some of them will come and talk about an hourly rate. We have one that we talk about, but we really say that that isn't really applicable to what we're talking about here because we know that you know the website will be X to X based on what we talked about from the sitemap and the technology.
Right, or right.
Logo will be this. And it's some for some people it's an issue, but it's I think the pricing hourly thing is just really tough to you know make a living on.
Well, one of the things now, Justin, is do you remember the session that we sat in on?
Is that when Stefan sat next to us, Sagmeister, like on?
Yeah, when Sagmeister came in halfway through and just plopped down on the floor next to you. Yeah.
You wouldn't give him a chair because you're a jerk.
He didn't ask for a chair because he's the man.
Yes, I remember that. That was a good one. That was David Baker.
David Baker, that's the guy's name. Yeah, very like super intelligent about pricing. And I think that one of the things that he mentioned about hourly rates is that, number one, he didn't care about them. But number two is that they're really more about positioning yourself.
Exactly.
That it's more about setting up a tone of who you are as a business or who you are as a independent professional than it is about how you actually price your work. So, you know, his point that the takeaway that I got from that, Justin, I remember him saying, whatever your hourly rate is, it should be three digits. And whether or not you use it to actually price out your jobs doesn't always really matter. It's just something to tell a client so that they get an indication of, oh, this guy is Donovan Berry is $150 an hour. Holy crap. He must be amazing. But if Donovan Berry is $50 an hour, well, you know, maybe I could get my nephew to take care of this too.
Yeah, you know that's been one of David's things that he's talked about for years, and I think it's one of the most powerful parts of his presentation. And I remember I was at one of his events, and he just talked about, you know, if you're telling people your hourly rate's anything under 125, then you know you're really hurting yourself. And you know that number may have gone up or gone down based on the economy or his philosophy now, but no, I think it's true, and I think people make a judgment right off the bat, you know, from your website to, you know, when you start pitching them numbers. Cause I mean, I've been on the other side of the, table when someone's chosen us, we've been the most expensive and I've asked them, you know, what is it about our presentation and what we did that made you want to go with us? And it really came down to the perception of what they're going to get in the end.
Right. Well, right.
You were a little more expensive, but everything you talked about doing, it seemed you really cared about where we're going and you're going to do your research and strategy. So I think pricing and that, and how you answer that question is all a part of how you're marketing yourself.
And yeah. It's almost like it's an extension of the brand that you are presenting. That is your company. And that price point, that hourly rate, whether or not you even ultimately use it to define your price point on a project is a part of that brand. It's a part. It becomes a part of their perception of you more so than it becomes, you know, how you price out your jobs. I thought that was riveting information. And just to tell you, like, how just, I mean, to Donovan, to get from what Justin's talking about here, like, even Stefan Sagmeister walked into the room to hear that. Yeah, like, that's crazy.
Do you remember how many notes he was taking? I was like, blown away.
I feel like guy was taking a lot of notes.
Yeah.
He was super cool, but can I sit here? Is that okay? You know, that kind of thing. Like,
well, here's
super.
Here's what I find is there are certain times where you have a client where you're going to do some production items, mm-hmm. and they are going to pay you hourly, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But the main reason I think that I found it was I went to Emily Ruth Cohn was in town a few years ago, and then she really, yeah. you know, I went to dinner great. With her the night before. She's great. She does pricing. But, you know, and then based on my experience, what happens is if you go to a company and you're bidding like a logo for them and you bid it on an hourly rate process, there's a couple things that are going to hurt you. One is they can't budget it, so they don't know what it's going to cost. And since it's not an ongoing project where it's production, where they said, oh, we're just going to, you know, oh, we know we're going to have Nate do work. We'll just budget him 10 hours a week for the yeah. rest of whenever. They're like, well, we don't know how much to budget. So if you give them an hourly rate and then they say, well, how long will it take? That's the next question. And all they do is they just multiply it and then they,
yeah, X times Y.
And then they say, well, it should cost this much.
We do not do a recall.
So yeah. you might as well have just given them that final number at the end.
Exactly. That's kind of what I do.
The other thing is when you're dealing with the hourly rate, the first thing they'll be is, well, can you do it faster? If you give them a
true, right. You thought exactly. Yes.
And then you have to think about how to cut corners. Or if you give them a flat rate and they say, you know, why does it cost this? You just say, this is why it costs this. And then it's given more of a, oh, we take it or leave it. There is no cheaper rate.
Right. And a lot of times what I'll find myself doing if they want some back and forth is I'll leave my cost where it is and make adjustments on what I'm offering for that cost. If I know, okay.
That's another Baker thing too.
Yeah. Is that?
Yeah.
Man, that guy totally influenced my entire professional life, and I've forgotten that half of it came from him.
It's one of those things, if you said, hey, I'm going to do a logo for you for like $3,500 and I'm going to show you five directions. I'm just making that up.
Yeah.
You're like, well, you know, we only have, you know, $2,900 or whatever else. He's like, okay, great. I'll give you like three or four or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's, and we do that. That's actually how we do it. Pretty smart. We're like, yeah, that's great. But, you know, we're going to have to show you two directions versus three or whatever.
Yeah, what I've found, like in practice with that, is that the clients at least that I've worked with have been really, really receptive to it. You know, like, you know, they're most people. I think that most people in the world are good people. They want to treat you like a professional as long as you're presenting yourself as such. But if you say, well, for that amount, I can't give you, you know, the sky and the moon and the stars, but I can give you the moon. That I think that at least in my experience, most people have been really, really amicable to that. I even had it where, you know, one of the things that I'll do is, you know, if I'm working for a small business, I kind of have a set of things that I offer for kind of a standard price. Donovan, it puts me in that situation like you were talking about a little while ago, where I can say, oh, well, generally what I do is I offer this, 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 and this, and I offer it for X amount of dollars. And you know, with a case, this just happened not all that long ago. And I'm just remembering, Donovan, we totally forgot to do what are you designing. So we're going to have to wrap back around to do that.
Okay.
What I just had happen was someone say, well, I'm interested in like the main bits of that, but the supplemental stuff, how about we scrap that and instead you do, you know, these other kind of things that I'm interested in that would be, you know, in to my ear, about the same amount of work on my end. So I just said, sure. Like, you know, kind of work with your clients a little bit back and forth on what you're offering for that price to get them what they want, and hopefully they'll say yes and go for it. Solid. Yeah. Conversation killer. Statement complete. Done.
All right, well, let's take a break. We'll come back to what we're designing.
Let's do it. Hey, we're back. Donovan, you know what we should do right now? Instead of doing what we're designing, we should give some pro tips out about pricing.
All right. You want to finish with that instead?
Yeah, and then we'll come back and then we'll do what are you designing, because we can then pretend that we didn't just do a whole what are you designing section and have the recording flip out on us. So, Justin, one of the things we were just talking about, help me out here, because it was the round numbers thing. And we got this from David Baker's presentation, too. Walk us through the round numbers thing, if you can, and your specific take on that.
Well, you know, for me, I think that part of pricing is it's like an art form. And
yes, the art of pricing. Yes.
And we look at, you know, I look at each client and, you know, try to judge based on our conversation and the size of the company and if we've done stuff like this before in the past or if it's a new client, you know, kind of where the range is going to be based on how much it's going to cost us to do it. And, you know, I always give my clients a range for a couple of reasons. One, I know that, you know, David a lot of times says, you know, just say it's going to be like 10 grand. You know, and I'll say, well, it's going to be like 10,000 to like 1150 or 11,500 just because, you know, we know that there's going to be some, you know, things that are going to evolve and, you know, we can't plan for every single iteration or things happen, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
And I think that kind of falls within some of the stuff that he talks about. But, you know, when we actually get to the final bill or the final estimate, you know, I'll price something just below 3 grand because I know that's the threshold. At least I think that's a threshold for the client.
Right.
And, you know, I know he says it should be 3 grand and you should do 2,900. And I just really disagree with that because, you know, for us, you know, sometimes if the client thinks they're getting it, it's under 3 grand and maybe I'm quote unquote losing $100. That's worth it to get the job.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of those things. And I took that point to be for project estimating and a lot less for final billing. I could be off on that, but that.
No, you're right. No, you're right.
Yeah. His point was that a client will accept a large round number more readily than they will accept a smaller, less round number. So that, you know, sending a $10,000 estimate is better than sending a $9,500 estimate.
There's a reason.
I don't know that that's always true.
Everything you ever see is never priced round numbers. If you buy a car, you buy a tube of toothpaste, you buy a house, they don't round number them.
That's a bullshit psychological holdover from an earlier time when people were less educated.
You mean yesterday and tomorrow?
No, it's a holdover, dude. It's like underline. You underline because you want something to be italic, but now people just underline.
Part of the other thing is when people see a number that's not exactly round, there's normally some thought that you came up with of why you came up with, like, you had some formula of your hourly rate, how many times.
You're doing the formula thing again, yeah.
And you have those things, and it looks like you put some thought into the number, where if you just say it's $3,000, like, you just made it, pull that out of your ass.
I don't know, Justin, has that been your experience? do we all not, here's my question, do we all not just pull these numbers out of our asses?
Well, I think...
There's your serious thought-provoking question of the show.
I think when I started, I absolutely did, you know, because, you know, when I started, I went and got, like, the Graphic Artist Guild pricing
book. Oh, God, yes.
And I got, you know, I also went to creativebusiness.com and downloaded all their stuff, and I'm like, oh, this can't be too hard. And I would, you know, I'd go in with a price and, you know, someone would look at me and be like, are you serious? It's like 10 times more than, you know, I've ever paid, you know, someone for this before. And so I definitely took my lumps on pricing. But, you know, I get to the point where you have to understand your local market and what your friends are or your, however you want to look at them, your competition is billing. And you got to be competitive and you got to figure out, you know, if, you know, you can deliver on that price and if you feel you're worthy of that. And then you start pulling stuff out of your ass.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point to make sure that you are competitive for your market. I wouldn't let that stop people.
We're in a big city, but here in Omaha, we're in a smaller market.
The market of people that do the kind of work that we do here is a bit small. We everybody knows everybody here.
But I mean, we think people charge less here than they would in New York.
Oh, definitely. I've gotten jobs in the past because I don't charge what people in New York charge. Now, if you're in New York, yo, charge what you should charge. But if you're not, like Justin says, take notice of you know, what the kind of the competitive rate for that is in your area. Now, chances are your buddies, your competitors, the people you see at AIJ stuff or like local events, you know, they ain't going to tell you, but you can at least, you know, you'll send yours out and you'll hear like just say, oh my God, you're 10 times higher than everyone else. Well, maybe if you're lucky, you can get them to tell you, you know, who they talk to, and then you say, oh, well, that son of a bitch agency over there is only charging, you know, $300 for a logo.
Let me just jump in there.
Sure.
I've actually bid on a project against a rival firm, or not a rival firm, but actually a firm that
was those bastards at Faust, wasn't it? No, I'm just kidding.
No, actually,
they're not bastards. They're very nice.
I did it a couple years ago. I was in a bid against Drew.
Oh, dude! Oh my God! Tell me more.
And
if
we
lose this part of the recording, I'll cry. Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
Oh, and after we sent our proposals, then we shared our proposals and we just talked about the pricing, and you know, because I wanted to learn what he was doing and vice versa. And you know, I think that you can do that. I think you can share, you know, your thought process against things. I don't know. We didn't make the next round. Drew did. I don't know if he got the job or not. I can't remember.
Who was? Can you say who the client was?
I don't know if Drew would want me to, but
that's fair. Who was more expensive?
You know, actually, we were really close to each other.
Sure you were. No, I get that. Who was more expensive?
Which was very cool. I don't remember.
God damn it, Justin. You got to tell me these things.
Let's just say Drew was more expensive.
All right, fine. Yeah, okay. Yeah. You got a bigger operation, but
yeah.
Drew's got a bigger Drew.
Yeah, no. Back then, Drew and I were the same exact size, but.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Okay. So, like, back.
Yeah, but, like, you know, I talk to Grip, and I talk to Terry Marks, and I have other friends, Stefan, and we talk about, you know, what we'd price for things, or if I'm doing a new project that I've never done before, and, you know, I'll call Terry and I'm like, gosh, how much would you price this out for, and what would you do? I mean, that's part of the whole community thing, right? I mean, that's part of
the
joint. Yeah, but I think you definitely should, you know, talk to other creatives and you know, like I really was pumped that, you know, Drew and I shared just kind of how we did certain things. I mean, you know, we literally shared our proposals. Like I saw how we wrote about stuff and vice versa. So, you know, it just depends how comfortable you are. I mean, I think there's enough work out there for everybody. And I think as a community, we have a responsibility to bill appropriately for what we do. Now, granted, I'll bill as appropriately as I can, as long as I can pay my mortgage, right?
Right. But well, and since you have employees, you have to worry about paying their mortgages too, to a certain extent.
But I don't want to give stuff away for free. And I think as much as we try to, you know, price things in a way that will support the design community. I mean, if I lose work, I want to lose it on our price, not our capability.
Okay. And if you want to know how Drew Davies puts a proposal together, make sure to email JA@rule29.com. We'll get that sent right out to you. Donovan, let's take our last break here, and then let's do our what have we been designing.
Okay, Justin, what are you designing?
You know, we just are finishing up our first iPhone app.
That's fucking brilliant, dude. Tell me about. I just did.
What's an iPhone app?
No, it's a phone. You have a. It's your phone.
Oh.
It's those things that are not your phone that are on your phone.
Oh, the app for that thing.
Yeah, the app apps.
Okay.
The app of apps.
So I'm gonna have an app for that.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if you'd actually buy this app, but you may.
Is it? So it's not a free app, is what you're saying?
No, it is. Let me rephrase that. It is a free app, but it's more sort of industry related, for our client's particular industry.
Nice.
It's been fun. You know, it's been challenging to, you know, you think you know user interface design, you know, when you do a bunch of sites and stuff, but you know, the whole app experience has been really challenging and been interesting for us to learn, you know, just how to redesign and think in that, you know, that area.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a different experience. It's like when I'm teaching web design right now, and I'm trying to tell my students, like, no, you need to make sure that your rollovers and your buttons have an on state, because if someone reads this on an iPad, for instance, you don't have a rollover anymore. So you have to make sure that there's interaction when they actually click that button. I imagine, how different is this from designing a website, for instance?
I mean, the way we approached it is pretty similar, but the whole design process for us, at least, was really different. Right. And then midway through the development, the client wanted to also make it an iPad app.
Which is nuts. And like, you have to redo that stuff, right? Like, you have to do it twice, kind of?
Absolutely. And then, you know, theoretically, you would rethink it and say, okay, now the iPad has more functionality in some sense than the phone because you have more space.
You got a lot more real estate, right?
We do with that. And we just didn't get a chance to really dig into that the way we'd want to because of budget and time.
Right, but, right.
No, it's really interesting. I hope we get to do more.
Did you guys develop that in-house, or did you have someone outside of that doing it?
No, we have a partner that we're working on coding side with just for speed.
Did you, like, bring in different people of different hand sizes to test the app, and did you consider that in your proposal?
Renting different sized hand models to do this? Yeah, of course I did. I mean, yeah.
Stone cold busted all that, yeah. I know they got some small hands there at Rule 29 to get Tim Damitz out there. He's got his tiny little hands. I'm just imagining.
Well, Tim Damitz is like a complete clone of you, so his hands are whatever size yours
no,
are.
No. I've got man hands.
Yours are just tiny slight, little, tiny just, little Rule 29 hands. The only difference is you're a little bit older, so your hands are a little more wrinkly.
Yeah, a little more rugged, let's say. Let's use that terminology. Yeah. Donovan, what have you been designing, man?
Well, I've got this excitement. We've got this website. Had it done for a while. The client has finally put in their content management system.
Like done like programmed, done like designed?
Oh, the design and the HTML has been done.
Okay.
So we just have to now put our HTML and our images into the content management system so they can fill out the content.
So like WordPress?
Like SharePoint.
Okay, I don't know SharePoint.
Yeah, it's like Microsoft. So
Justin's giving groans over there.
I'm going to install it.
It's like poop.
Okay, well, I'm going to install it soon. All I know is I've been holding off because I have to turn on the Dell.
How do you manage content on your site? We use poop. It's not great, but you know, it sticks.
So, Donovan, I'm sorry. You got to tell me how the experience was because the first time I did it, I wanted to, you know, stab myself in the eyes.
Awesome is what I'm hearing.
Probably on the next show, if you know,
That's right, because you just said you have to install it yet.
Right.
So you have to turn on your PC for the first time in 6 months.
Something like that.
Okay, so next time will you report how your SharePoint, is that? Not Silverlight, SharePoint.
Silverlight's actually going away.
I heard that. That's
our
right.
news for the week. What's happening, what's new?
What's happening, what's update? Silverlight done. Flash making a comeback. But I got to be honest with you. Yo, I've been having Flash kill Safari all over the place. I think there might be some vendettas at play there. Anyway. Can I talk about what I'm designing?
I guess.
Okay, so hopefully.
Man, that's been a great show.
How are you going to top SharePoint?
Because it's ridiculous but also amazing story. So now hopefully I can get through the story this time without the recording potentially crashing, which totally didn't happen. So right now I've got a website project and I am serving the role as the developer. I'm going to code the website for another local designer that I've been doing some work with. They're going to design the site. I'm just going to make it go. I've done this before. This is a new client, first time we're working with them. And I wasn't really sure how it was going to go. The first time we did it, it was a pre-existing design. And so, you know, it wasn't really even that designer's vision. We were just kind of working with what they had. This time it's like, okay, blank slate. It's like, okay, I'm a visual guy. I don't know how this is going to go down. Maybe these comps are going to come back and I'm going to have problems with them. I've been known to be that way. But they came back. And they were gorgeous. And then we talked about it a little bit, and the designer went back and even actually made them a little bit more full-featured, made them a little bit more lush and a little bit more pretty. Like, it's a very, very beautiful, pretty-ass pretty website. And we went to go present it to the client. My part of this was to present them a sitemap. Take all of the content they had right now, name it out by page. And the only thing that I did was kind of reorder it into a manner that would make sense for their visitors as opposed to the manner that it was organized before, which was just kind of like whatever the dude who doesn't even work there anymore threw up 2 years ago.
Awesome.
Right. So
was it in SharePoint?
So it was just they don't even know what it was. Like, they don't know what that system it was at all. It was some kind of crazy thing. Might have been something like SharePoint. But they didn't know how to use it at all, so we're even scrapping that and we're moving to something else. But all I did was just go in and pull out that content and reorganize it into the way the site we think should work for their audience. Not that big a deal. Here's a Word doc. Check it out. Now look at these totally beautiful, lush web comps that that the designer did. Look at how gorgeous. Aren't they totally gorgeous? Client couldn't have cared less about like the beautiful visual design of this. The Word doc, they were all about that. Like they couldn't stop talking about it. It was, it blew my mind. Like again, as a visual person, I was just like, no, stop looking at my stupid Word doc. Look over here. Look at the watercolor stuff. Isn't that pretty? That's going to be your website. They're like, nah, you know, whatever you guys want to do over there is fine. You know, you just, you know, whatever, just do it. But this stuff we're super interested in is, oh, we'll put this page here and maybe we'll title this page something different. And it was staggering to me. It was mind blowing as a visual designer.
Did they really talk like that?
Actually, kind of a little bit. I hope they don't listen to the show, but I think that the designer I'm working with will. So hopefully they'll get a kick out of that. But that just, it knocked my socks off. I've never been in that situation before where the client just straight up doesn't care about the, like it could have been complete garbage. They would have been fine with it. It could have been 10 times better from our perspective. They would not have cared. I've never been in that situation before. They had nothing to say about it whatsoever. Color, layout, type, nothing. Just, you know, whatever you guys want to do. But one thing I can tell you, Donovan Berry, the price on that project is right.
There you go.
There you go. Justin, I think that's about all we got for today. You want to bring it home for us? You got anything else to say? Can you tell us briefly, quickly, in 30 seconds or less, how your premiere of your documentary went?
It went great. This one was about the extreme poverty in the slums of Nairobi, Kenya.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show before.
And we so far we've raised almost 80 grand. So
nice.
We're pretty excited about that. And I need to get you guys a copy.
Yes. Oh my God, I would love to see it. Will we see you at next year's Oscars? Will you be submitting it in the documentary category?
We're actually trying to get into Sundance. So
nice. Yes. Okay. You're on the right path. I love it.
Maybe that's as close as I'll get.
No. Shh, take it all the way, baby. Take it all the way. All right, Donovan. This has been the Reflex Blue Show.
Yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We
don't even know what we're going to talk about.
If you guys have anything that you think we're wrong at, you think we're right at, leave us comments.
Let's chat it up at 36point.com. You can find us.
When is this thing going to air?
Probably like Monday. I don't know.
Maybe Tuesday. Probably whenever you're listening to it.
Yeah.
Well, then why don't you tell people to sign up and do the hand turkey? Suckers.
Yo.
Oh
my God. Did you see that I challenged Vaughn to hand turkeys and I didn't even get mine done yet?
Where's your lay mail?
His is awesome.
It's coming this. Quiet your mouth,
awesome.
Justin Aarons.
You've already lost. I've already seen it.
No, I'm putting it in.
Where do people go to enter their hand turkeys or to view the hand turkeys and to see how badly Vaughn is destroying Nate?
Go to handturkeys.tumblr.com.
Handturkeys.tumblr.com. Justin, is it important that I use the template? May I use my own hand?
If you really want to, yeah. Hey, it's up to you to get the votes. So whatever you want to do.
All right, coming this weekend.
And is this the third annual?
Third annual.
Let's do
third
it. Oh,
annual
and also
Rule 29 hand turkey.
And Donovan, we just celebrated fifth anniversary of podcasting between our old Be a Design cast and the Reflex Blue Show. So what a high five for that.
Congratulations, ladies.
Thank you, dude. All right. So that'll be the show for this week. We'll see you guys back here in 2 weeks where we will talk about more things with regards to the graphics designs.